Welcome to Filmstrip. These podcasts are spoiler-filled as we discuss the plots, characters, and themes of the films in review. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.
Welcome to Filmstrip. I'm Jay.
I'm Carmelita.
And we're here to talk about Possessor, starring Andrea Riseborough, Christopher Abbott, Tumpence Middleton, Sean Bean, and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Written and directed by Brandon Cronenberg, released in 2020 to a bunch of critical acclaim, festival awards, all kinds of stuff. We're here to talk about it. It's going to be a lot of fun to unpack. But first of all, welcome back to Filmstrip, Carmelita. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, hi, Jay. I'm so happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this one is all your fault, completely. So, so to take people back a little bit in Filmstrip archives, more recent archives, you can go listen to our David Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future review. And we decided to do that show because both of us had watched the trailer and we're like, I'm going to go see this. And they're like, I must talk to someone about this. So through that process, Brandon Cronenberg, his son came up and I said, oh, you know what? I didn't even know he had a son as a filmmaker. I knew he had one, but I thought he was doing something else. And so you said, yeah, you need to watch Possessor. He's got a movie coming out called Infinity Pool. And I saw the trailer and I was like, that looks cool too. And you're like, yeah, you should watch Possessor. And I was like, okay. And so I look on the little handy Just Watch app and I'm like, oh, that stuff's on Hulu. All right, cool. And I throw that on and the complete mind fuck that was. And I was like, okay, well, this is a future episode. I can tell. because there was so much to it, but I got to know how you found Possessor and Brandon Cronenberg and all that.
So Possessor, I just kind of stumbled upon, I think I saw some mention of it on social media and I love science fiction. So I had heard it was kind of science fiction-y and that it's directed by Brandon Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's son. So I was like, oh, well, that sounds cool. And so I think I rented it like on Amazon or something and I fell in love instantly. As soon as the credits were rolling, I was like, I need to watch that again. And so I like immediately bought it on digital so I'd have it. And I've watched it several times since and it only came out 3 years ago, but it's something I find very rewatchable. I just fell in love with it. And I just love what Brandon Cronenberg's doing. He's still very early in his career. So we'll see over time how his career progresses. But after Possessor, I was like, I'm sold. Anything this man does, sign me up. I'm there.
So that was my next question, because after this, I was like, what else has this guy done? And he had one other film called Antiviral, and thank you Tubi for having everything cool on in the world to watch. I went back and watched that one. Have you seen Antiviral?
I have, yeah.
I watched that, and then having now seen Possessor and Infinity Pool, I'm like, you see the seeds of both of those movies in Antiviral. I'll say just real quick on Antiviral. I think it's good. It's a real slow burn. It's not quite there. I don't think, like, if we were going to review it, I'd say it's okay. But the ending of it is where it's like, oh, this guy's got some thought. He's got some ideas.
Yes.
And then I'm with you. When I watched Possessor, the next thing I did was just watch it again the next day. And I think I told everybody I could, you know, text, like, you need to go watch this,
like,
right now.
I was absolutely like that. I would not shut up about it. Anybody I knew that liked horror or science fiction, I was really obnoxious about it. Like, you need to see this movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah, because it is a modern sci-fi movie. I think sci-fi gets used as a term for a lot of stuff that's not really that anymore. And I'm not trying to be like, you know, gatekeeper snob here, sci-fi stuff. But to me, when you say sci-fi, I think of things like Philip K. Dick stories. Like, that's the first thing that comes in my head, because that was my introduction to sci-fi as a kid, was that literature. So I've always judged everything by that, which, fair or unfair. And I know Cronenberg says he took inspiration for this from a lot of things, but I'm like, there's a lot of Philip K. Dick in this. Like, there's a lot of Total Recall and, you know, all that kind of stuff that we know of that have been made into, you know, movies of his, off of his work. But there's a lot of seeds of his stuff throughout his work. Antiviral's got it too. And Infinity Pool too. And, but this one in particular, I was like, okay, I'm down now. I've seen Andrew Riseborough and other things. I didn't know Christopher Abbott from anything, before, but of course, Jennifer Jason Leigh, when Sean Bean was there, I was like, I just want to know how he's going to die. Cause it's going to happen. Like it's, right? It is a given thing. The dude knows it too. He leans into it. Fine. The many deaths of Sean Bean. And then I knew Tompkins Middleton from The Oddest Thing on the World, not from any of her British television or theater work, but there's a podcast slash conversation show, that in Britain where they bring in experts to argue about things. And I happened to catch one once where they brought in two literature experts, one from Great Britain and one from America, okay, to talk about 1984 versus Brave New World and who got it more right. Right. And in between the two guys talking, it's on YouTube. You can watch it. In between the two of them talking, they had a set of actors over to the side replay scenes from both books and things. And so Tompkins Middleton was playing parts from both of them. And I just thought she was just so neat. And I thought, who is this woman? Like, why has she done more stuff? I was like, oh, she's British. And so she didn't get the right rom-com over here or whatever to come over. But I knew that face. And so when I saw her name come up, I was like, oh, this will be interesting. I hadn't seen her in a movie before. So I knew she was. And then I just knowing coming from you, I'm like, okay, this is going to be good because you haven't recommended anything bad yet. And I know it's probably going to have like a big, like, in the middle of it. And like I said, I rewatched it again and I've told everyone I know about this movie. And like I said, it really made me want to go, okay, I'm now jazzed for Cronenberg. And then we'll talk about Infinity Pool another day. But yeah, I was just pumped for this. And so I'm so glad we're getting a chance to chat about it here because this movie owes a lot to a lot of things that have come before, but I haven't seen anything like this in a long time. And I dare say this kind of story these days generally turns into like, you know, 9 or 10 episodes of something. You know, it's I don't see a lot of movies like this getting made and certainly not for any kind of amount of budget. And there's not a lot of budget information out there about this, but it's anywhere from like $2 to $6 million, you know? So, I mean, everything you see here is practical too, which is wild.
It is.
Yeah.
I want to highly recommend to anyone who's into physical media, the Blu-ray of this, the uncut version.
That's the one I've seen. Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So the uncut version is great. There's just a few changes, and it's not really changes so much as it's, you just get to see more of a sex scene, more of a graphic attack on someone, but they have all the behind the scenes stuff in the bonus features. And it's really cool to see behind the scenes how they did these practical effects. It's really neat.
Yeah. I appreciate directors that can lean into practical effect and not call it out heavily, you know, and that's the one thing this movie does a really good job of is having all of this stuff go on, but it also feels so contained and small, you know, for a movie that kind of jumps across this futuristic city or whatever. It seems sort of just in its own little closet. It's kind of wild how they pull it off. But I don't know. I think we should do a quick plot summary to get into the movie here. And I'm just going to keep this as straight as I can because there's a lot to unpack. I got to run down the rabbit holes. We're trying to keep this in a paragraph here. So
you're the master of plot summary. So.
I would defer that to Ron. Good. Ron is actually the better one than I am. But I do what I can with these things. So. Tasha Voss is an assassin who takes control of other people's bodies to carry out hits for the company through an electronic chip implanted in the subject's head that she links to. Tasha's skills are noteworthy, but she's been struggling with the final act needed to pull out of her mission. She's got to shoot herself while inhabiting the subject. Her boss, a retired assassin named Gerder, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, thinks it's because Tasha still tries to maintain somewhat of a normal life with her husband and young son, even though she's currently not even living with them. Tasha goes to visit her family after a mission, but in spite of her considerable effort, she still feels emotionally detached from them. She accepts a new assignment, which will have her take out a man named Parse, that's Sean Bean, the head of a rival corporation that her company can acquire if he's out of the way, some sort of hostile takeover situation, vaguely explained because it doesn't really matter. But to do this, she's got to inhabit a guy named Colin Tate, the boyfriend of Parse's daughter, Ava, whom she's also supposed to kill. Tasha successfully inhabits Tate, but something goes awry a few times before the night of the hit, where Colin sees her in the mirror in moments of clarity. Tasha's able to kill Ava and seriously wound Parks, but still can't pull the trigger to get himself out or get herself out. So Colin is able to wrest control from her eventually and goes after her family once he discovers where they live by probing her mind. And in a final sequence, he's able to kill her husband, but her son stabs him in the neck. Tasha gains control and realizes Gerner's taken over her son to finish the job, and she shoots her son before being pulled back from Colin as he dies. Now free of all attachments and seeming guilt from what she does, Tasha aces her exit test with Gerner and credits roll. And if your jaw's not on the floor, it ought to be, because mine was. When that end goes down, it wasn't the first time it happened in this movie. We'll talk about the times when it does. But when that ending happened, I literally was just sitting there just, what is that?
Yes. Like,
how did
mouth
that?
Mouth agape.
Right. I can't remember the last time I watched a movie where I felt like that at the end of it either, where it just totally just, you know what? Actually, yeah, I can't. Seven. When I walked out, so when Brad Pitt opens the box, and you knew it was like, oh, I remember walking out of that theater, just sort of, wow, you know, just
yeah, in a daze.
Yeah, just gobsmacked by it all. Right. And that's what good sci-fi is supposed to do, especially movie sci-fi, is really just leave you just sort of mind blown at the end of an experience like that.
Most definitely. Yeah, I had a similar feeling that, like, wow. That just happened.
Mm-hmm.
So they went there.
Yeah. And the more you rewatch this, the more you like pick up on so many little things, the seeds that lead to that, you know, like the screenplay here is so tight and so well strung together that, you know, twisty screenplays, when you start rewatching them, it's like pulling at the threads. Sometimes they start to unravel a little bit. You know, they're not as clean as you think. This one is on par with something like Back to the Future and some of these other movies where it's just, you're just watching it weave, or even the first Alien, you know, something like that. Yeah. And I mean, you're seeing it all pay off, and the more you rewatch it, the more you get from it. And you're like, oh, I didn't remember that time, or there's this. And I got to give a lot of credit to the actors here. And I really want to call out Christopher Abbott, because he's got a hell of a job here. He's got to play three people. He gets one scene as himself, really, you know, as the Tate character. And then he has to play Andrea Riseborough inhabiting his mind, but trying to be him, which is a whole other thing. And then he's got to play the part of him that realizes this is happening and is pissed about it. And I'm like, man, that, what a hell of a job. Cause I mean, really all she gets to do, she gets like one scene out of the little bed thing that they lay her in to do all the work with. She's mostly just, you know, sitting there, or you just see her in flashes in the screens. But I really expected, like, what we're going to see is him, but then it's going to do that mirror trick and it'll actually be her, and we'll get to watch her do it, you know, and like Quantum Leap, but it was always Scott Bakula. No, yeah. Like they go the other way. And I was impressed with that. I'm like, that is not something easily done.
No, his performance is amazing. And I appreciate it more and more with each viewing, all the subtleties when you're looking, when you know when to look for the switch,
mm-hmm.
when it's him in control, when it's her in control, when it's their consciousnesses are kind of bleeding into one another. It's very cool the way he's able to put all that across. And I think another thing about Brandon Cronenberg, his writing and his direction, he is an expert, and he's so early in his career, but he really excels at creating scenes that show us visually what's happening psychologically.
Mm-hmm. And that's not easily done without a whole lot of fancy effects. Like it's really just some shakes and some lights, and there's an actor and then another actor, and they're superimposing and all that stuff. And the film grammar in this is really tremendous. Like, And Kareem Hussein is his cinematographer. He's worked with him on a lot of stuff for years, all of his films, and then they've done other things together. But he really credits him, and he credits two guys named Derek Lipscomb and Dan Martin, the visual effects guys, for giving the look of this movie. Because what he wanted to do was, he said, well, we're going to have some dark here. He said, but I really want this to be in a lot of bright light. And that was the thing that got me. And I thought, now that's a bold choice when you have this violent, garish, insane stuff happening, and you're going to cast it against these bright blue lights or these bright yellow lights, all these open rooms and things. Like, you're asking for people to kind of get lost in the starkness of it. And it almost leaned into me about that. The people that are getting possessed, if you would, in this, have to feel like they're in like this perpetual dream state. And this movie feels like it's just got this big dreamy thing going on the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have the scenes where they're just bathed in blue light and they do those superimposed images and really cool stuff, like when they're out of sync, when their consciousnesses are starting to separate, but she's still inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
And they show you their bodies coming apart, but it's really their psyches.
Yeah. But that's a great way to visualize that, though, right? Because usually it's like half of a face, but it's the whole being. And that was a great choice. And I love that the movie opens up. They throw us right into this girl, and you see her picking through the braids in her hair, and she sticks this wire down in her skull. And automatically I'm like, oh, I am in this land, because I know this setup, right? This idea. And you see this woman go and just brutally murder this guy. And we never really know why this is happening. That's the other thing. I don't really have much to say about the company and all this works for. I'm like, Brandon Cronenberg has a lot to say about consumerism and things like that, but I don't think he chose this movie as a way to do it. I think it's almost like, yeah, this is the part of the plot you don't need to pay attention to. It's really about these five people, and you have to watch them work. It's really three of them. And to watch that character do that hit, and then you hear say, pull me out, and you're like, oh, okay, this is like that part in Inception where you got to have the, you know, I need somebody to kick me off a ledge. Yeah, I need to be extracted. I need to throw in a bucket of water off a van, whatever. And she puts that gun in her mouth and she can't pull the trigger. And I thought, oh, this is, wow, we have already gone down dark lane. And the fact that they cast a black actress for this, because they didn't write the part that way. She was just so good in the test audience. They had to have her, and to have her do the whole suicide by cop thing. I was like, wow, we really went places the first 3 minutes of this flick.
Yes. Pull no punches.
But it's brutal too, because the cops just, of course, they gun her down. But then there's that cop that walks up to her and shoots her right in the face. And I'm like, okay, man, that's even beyond. Like,
and the camera does not pull away. That's something in this film that's very striking. It does not pull away from the violence. But I will say, I don't think it ever feels gratuitous.
Mm-mm. It's not Rob Zombie.
It serves the story.
Yeah, no, it's very realistic, like in a lot of ways. It's like, that's what that would look like. If you stab somebody 40 times in the chest, it's going to be gooey and messy, and it's going to be all over your stark white sneakers. Your Jordans are ruined, you know, and when you get shot in the face, that's what it looks like. It's just, it's nasty, but it's so brutal and striking. And then you see, you know, we flash to the bed where the assassin's working or whatever, and she's that deep breath, you know, and you're like, holy cow. And they go through all this stuff where she has to pick up these little objects, you know, and it's like a psychology test she has to take to kind of recenter herself. Right. And it reminded me of, it's a kind of a throwaway scene in that movie True Lies, when Tom Arnold's dropping Arnold Schwarzenegger back up and he hands him that envelope and says, okay, who are you and where you been and what are you doing? He said, I'm Harry Tasker. I've been on a computer trip and I'm married to da, da, da. It's like they had to go through the line. And yeah, I thought,
I got to debrief you.
Right. Right. But I like this because, and Jennifer Jason Leigh has been an actress that's done this for years. She understands subtlety in incredible ways as a performer. And you can see in her eyes that she can tell Tassie's holding back on me. And I know she is. And she keeps trying to draw it out of her. It's like, why are you still hanging on to your old life? I thought you left your family. Why are you still talking about him? Why can't you let this go? And because she wants her to just be fully invested in whatever
you're committed to the work.
Yeah, right. Like you're married to your work. And I think in a lot of ways, this movie, it is a bit of a metaphor about being married to your work, you know, and being completely tied to it and giving yourself over to it and the guilt you feel for not doing so and then also doing so. It's just a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah. A lot about identity. Mm-hmm. And she's good at what she does. And I don't think it's in this conversation. I think it's in a later conversation with Gerder that Gerder says, you know, you have a special nature and we've worked hard to unlock it and refine it.
Yeah.
So there's something about Tassia Voss that is suited to this, especially suited to this work. And this is very difficult work. Like you have to be able to do the technical stuff, like be willing to put your consciousness in the body of another person. And then you have to be able to kill however many people to make it look like just a run of the mill murder, not an assassination.
Yeah. Cause that's the kick of this is that when they take out somebody, they find someone that they can pin it on. And that's the person that's going to be the inhabited one, because then it's nice and tidy. There's no mess. You know, it's like, oh yeah, well that person then they killed themselves. Yeah, there's no loose ends. The host
will be dead too.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no question. So it's how you can operate completely in the shadow. It's a great idea, actually. I was kind of sick, but I get it. You know.
Oh, it's totally sick. It's twisted.
Yeah.
And so there is something about her that is twisted.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we even get that when she goes and visits the family, right? Like she's trying to warm herself up.
She has to rehearse.
Yeah. And what to say to her kid, you know, and she's so cold to both him and her husband. And when she went back, I was going like, okay, it's going to be like this bad relationship and some of this tension stuff. They could not have found a more like warm person to play her husband is this little sweet doddering professor guy or whatever. And her cute little son. I mean, he's just this little cute blonde kid, you know, and they're just like, hey mom, hey, you know, hey dear, come on in, you know, and they're just so sweet. And you're like, they have no idea what this woman does. Like they think she travels for work, which is not untrue, but right. And but it's funny to watch that because it wasn't what I expected. Again, I thought like, okay, it's been a bad relationship. That's, you know, she's just trying to maintain a relationship with her kid, but no, like they want her there, but she can't be there. Right. Like you watch her during dinner and it's, again, there's just this, the only word I can come up with is this cold performance that she's giving, you know?
Yes. Yeah. This like flat affect.
Mm-hmm. And even when she
doesn't feel it.
Yeah, I mean, she comes under her husband because they go, okay, I need to kind of reconnect with him. So they're having sex. And the whole time, like, she's laying there just sort of looking off into space, you know, like nothing. And it blew my mind. Like, she starts imagining, like, what would it look like to stab him in the neck? And then that's when she gets going. Or that's what I wanted to ask you is, like, did that get her going or was that just her distraction? And she's like, no, I got to get back.
Absolutely did.
Okay.
And that's something about this character and this story that I find really fascinating because – like when we met Gerder, her boss, Gerder strikes me as someone who's very professional, detached. Mm-hmm. I would imagine when Gerder does a job, there's no thrill, there's no rage, there's no feelings.
Mm-mm.
You turn out somebody's lights and then you come back. It's a job. With the Tassia Voss character, like when she commits the first assassination at the beginning of this film, she runs her hands through the blood.
Yeah.
And the look on the face is like, she's really enjoying the feeling of the blood on her hands. Like, and she's fascinated by the way it feels. And then we have this sex scene with her husband that she's initiated, but she can't get into it. She's not really participating and feeling it. She isn't enthusiastic until she imagines someone getting stabbed in the neck. Like, and that's not a very professional way to look at murder in her line of work.
Yeah, you're
supposed to feel anything.
Yeah, I mean, they even tell her, like, you had a gun. Why did you stab that last one? You know, because shooting someone is impersonal. When you stab someone, that is very personal. You have to get very close. It's one of the things that made Freddy Krueger so freaky was you got to get close to stab somebody with that hand, or even Michael Myers, you got to get close to stab somebody with a knife. You know, you shoot people, you can be at a distance, right? And it's like she's trying to feel anything, because my reading on her is that she either doesn't know how to feel anything or doesn't know how to process feelings anymore, because she's had to trade them so many times that she's just trying to feel anything. And I read it that way. I'm glad you agree with me, because I didn't know if I was just going down a dark hole or something. Like, does she need to be thinking about murder to get off? Because that's a little, that's messed up. Like, it's also very Cronenberg, by the way. I just want to say, like, you know, you have a different visual style than Pops, but y'all agree on some things. It's pretty clear.
Yeah. Very common to fantasize about other people or other things during sex, but murder, though?
Well, we'll come to that.
That's extreme.
In a little bit when Ava and Colin are together later. We'll talk about that, because there are things that are done there that I'm like, that wasn't expected. So anyway, but yeah, she's still holding on to her old life, right? She can't let it go. But I love how in the morning she heads out and her husband's like, oh, why don't you stay? You know, come back. He's like, I got to go to work again, you know? And so she's made up her mind, like, I'm going to do this. Even though Gerda's telling her, like, this is a big one. Like, this is huge. It can't be messed up. And it's going to take a lot to do it. And she's just like, I got to have it. I got to do it. You know, it's, she can't get away from it. And watching her watch Christopher Abbott and Tumbitz Middleton from like across the way or whatever through the camera, and she's got the microphone. So I love how this movie, you can just assume she set it all up, but you don't know how, and it doesn't matter because it's, you just have to go with that. I love how she is repeating his lines back. And I didn't catch that the first time I watched this movie, but the next time he says something to Ava and then she'll try to say it again. And I'm like, Andrew Riseborough is trying to do an impression of him so that she can get his cadence down. And I thought, what a neat idea, though, the trouble you'd have to go through to get that going.
Yeah. Well, you're going to inhabit this person's body. And yeah, you're only going to be in his body for 3 days. It's not so long to have to string people along. But the more real it feels, the easier it's going to be close to the people that you need to be close to get the job done. And so, yeah, she's adjusting the pitch and the cadence of her voice. She's adjusting her accent to try and move her mouth the way he moves his mouth to get that feeling, to be able to, so she'll be able to project who this man is.
And she's watching his hands and the way he touches Ava, the way he reaches out, how his body mannerisms, because when you take over somebody's conscience, you still have to move them. Like, you've taken over for him at that point. And if you're off, it'll be obvious, right? And so she's got to blend in. But this guy is supposed to be, he's such a good target because he used to be a drug dealer. His best client was Ava. And then they fell in love and she got him a job with dad's rich company. So it's like, oh, we got all that shit going on now too, which is perfect. He's the perfect power dynamic. It's like, of course, this is how that would work. And we've all seen that and been there. But I love that trope is just sort of just thrown to the side. But you get it. But he's got to look like he could go unhinged at any minute, but she just can't go in there and be a Tasmanian devil on him all of a sudden. Like, she's got to ease her way to that moment because the dinner party is the obvious opportunity. And I don't know. I just got a real thrill watching her try to mimic him. And then when we cut to that part in the van where they've obviously abducted him and they've got him laying down and they're like, takes 4 hours to do the surgery. And that's what I like about this is that we don't see any of that go down, but they bother to tell us that there's a lot of time invested in it. You know, it's not just a toot, you're done. You know, they have to do a lot to pull this off. And, I like movies that use a lot of tech that don't explain the tech. But give you enough to realize that, like, oh, that's not just, you know, magical widgets. Like, there's actually like people behind it. I think that there's that one old scientist that's in the, the hit room, I called it, where they're all like controlling everything. It was like Knight Rider or something, but for hit people. And he's trying to tell her, she's like, yeah, just bring me out this time. He's like, well, why don't you just pull the trigger this next time? You know, I love that they have that banner and like, oh, like, but I like this because it's always James Bond, like by himself, right? And one of the things the modern ones did a good job of was that it's not always him. It's like five other people that are sort of helping him out all the time. And I like that you've got to have this group of people that make all this work. And there's the one.
And this is your coworker. This is your team. And those are the kind of coworker conversations that happen.
Right. Yes. Everybody's had that. Yeah. It's like, yeah. I mean, but I did like that it seems so normal to all of them. Like none of them were smacked with the idea of that what they were doing was so extraordinary. It just seemed like a Tuesday, you know, which is just insane to think about. But that's what I love about this. When you can take this absurd stuff and just make it like, well, this is just every day, you know, and, you know, I think there's secretly everybody that's watched enough movies looks around sometimes around the world and goes, there's like got to be something behind this making all this work, right? There's got to be people out there pulling the strings. It's fun to have the cabal, right? You know, but I happen to think, but I'm one of those people that thinks like, if there really was that, it would probably work a lot like this. It would be sort of understated. It looked like a bug repair van or something. You wouldn't pay any attention to it and it would just come and go. And, you know, random things would happen, you know, and you'd just be like, whatever, you know, well, like the Cash App, you know, founder got killed in San Francisco. It was tragic, terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm the sick, twisted son of a bitch that the first thing I thought was like, oh, it's like Possessor. Because I thought somebody do a hit on this dude. I mean, it's the first thing I thought. And I'm like, that's fair. Awful. But I mean, that's
you've been watching Possessor.
Right? I've been watching Possessor. It was on the brain. But I like the way they set all these things up and get in the speech patterns like we've talked about. And not for nothing, by the way, this is part of the plot of that horrible movie after last season. This whole put the chip on your brain and I can tell your thoughts and my thoughts and control your thing. I encourage people. They weren't completely off the rocker when they made that horrible movie. But I love that they set up rules for this, though, because again, this is not something I caught the first time, that the implant lasts 5 days and you have to like plug in every day. You have to recalibrate. Yeah. And I thought that was such a great phrase. I was like, oh, what a neat way to say that, you know, because it is unnatural and the body will not accept this unless we keep redoing it. And rather than do surgery 5 times, we can just stick it in the little dial machine and, you know, here we go.
No, it's very cool. I like that they mentioned that brain death of the host is necessary to be able to completely sever the connection to make sure you get out clean.
Mm-hmm.
I love the calibration machines that they jack into because they look very analog. And a lot of the tech in this looks worn and used and it looks analog. It doesn't look super, super future, shiny chrome. It's none of that.
Mm-mm. It's very much like Ridley Scott's used future of Alien. What I felt like.
And, absolutely.
You know, it's just that it shouldn't be fancy. It shouldn't be Star Trek. It should be used, you know, because it would be something you couldn't afford to make a lot of these. And so you would just make one and use it 100 times. You know, I mean, that's the efficiency of, you know, company work is companies like one. Thing,
it's very tangible.
Yeah. And it looks like one of those old like electronic testers. Like if you're testing the circuit or something, this is like they just strip that down, but you can see like, oh yeah, that's how you would plug that. If you're going to plug in, how else would you plug in? You plug in through the head where you get it from, you know, and it's neat. It's really cool the way they do that. And then the jump into him is some wild cinematography. You talk about, again, no CGI. This is all cameras and lights. And I'm like, that is some good work right there.
The wax melts.
Yes.
Are
yes.
very cool. They did the life molds and they built the wax figures that look, one that looks like Andrew Riseborough and the other looks like Christopher Abbott. And then they melt to dissolve her and then it reforms as him through those wax figures. It looks fucking cool.
It is cool. It is so cool. And what I love is when she wakes up in him the next day and the first thing she does is go to the bathroom and kind of get her bare. And I love that she's just kind of off. Like that's not like, oh, I'm just in a new body. Like it takes a little bit to sort of settle yourself and get something down. And I look like she's just like exploring everything. You know, she's just going to look in the mirror, got to see what's going on down here. We got all this and then just go for it. And it's not played off for like titillation or anything like that. It's done like this is what, if you jumped into a different body, the first thing you would do is check it out, right? Like, what's this thing got? You know, it's like getting in a new car.
Absolutely. Yeah. Your range of motion is going to be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
All of that muscle memory that you're used to with your own body does not apply. It's like driving someone else's car. Like when you get into someone else's car and drive it for the first time and like the brake feels funny and you don't know how much to hit the gas.
Yep. I used to drive stick shifts. So my friends that drove automatics would get in my car and have no idea what was going on. And I would feel the same. I would get in their car and like put my left foot through the floor and there was no pedal over there for me to hit. And so I would drive, I would brake with the left and drive with the right. Cause when you learn how to drive a stick shift, kids, that's what you could do back in the day. But yeah, I love that though, that they spend time with that. And then, you know, he's talking to Ava and I love how she knows something is different. Like she can tell. And I sort of took that into the, you can take over somebody, but you can't take over like their essence. Really. You can take over their body and you can act like them, but his eyes, there's something different in it, you know? And like, she can tell, she's looking at him like something's up with you. Like you're at, cause he's doing the same stuff that he was doing the night before. He reaches out for her and you know, you can tell like she did a good job studying, but Ava knows something is off about him. And that's what is kind of cool is that she's
and you
aware.
Can tell she can't put her finger on it because she's asking like, what's up with you today? And then he kind of asks like, oh, what do you mean? And she doesn't really have a good answer because she can't put her finger on what's different, but she knows like, no, something's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something's just off. And we'll see that play out through a couple of other characters too. But I wanted to ask you what you thought his job was because he goes to work for this company and like, he's looking through like, people's ring doors while they're fucking on the bed and he's like trying to figure out what kind of curtains they have. I'm like, what the hell is
this? So this is a data mining company and it looks like his position on the floor is that you watch all of these videos from people's webcams.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to very quickly, it looks like his particular task that day, I'm sure I would be willing to bet that like on different days, you're supposed to look for a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on this particular day, this particular task he's been given is to identify the window dressings. Is it blinds? Is it, is it curtains? What kind of curtains? And he has to be very specific. It's shears. There were white shears.
No pleats.
No pleat visible. It's blinds and he has to describe them. And the trick is, you know, he's supposed to be focusing right in on the windows that are visible and describe them as quickly as possible. And one of the ways that Voss kind of messes up this first day on the job is that when they get to the webcam of a couple having sex, he kind of stalls out.
Yeah.
And doesn't focus on the windows.
Yeah. I mean, they even make a joke about it later. It's like, I bet you see a lot of people having sex in that job. I don't know. I don't really keep up with it. And it's like, well, apparently that's like an everyday, but you hit on something. And it's what's so wild. Again, I go back to my Philip K. Dick stuff. All right. Is that he saw a future where they would have so much information on you. When you walked in a store, they would say, hey, Carmelita, the jeans you like are on sale today. And by God, we live in that world. Okay. Like
we live in that world.
We're having this conversation right now. I guarantee there's going to be stuff on my feed tonight that I didn't even think I was thinking about, but I am. And that is data mining. And you think, how do you accomplish that? Right. Well, there's got to be people that do it. Like people think, oh, robots do it all. No, it's just people. And the idea that Sean Bean built basically a slave shop out of that and made billions off of it, that's believable. That's actually probably the most believable thing in this whole fucking movie is that that exists. I'm like, that's probably a real job. They probably wouldn't observe that. And like, can we just have a pair of those goggles and borrow them? That's probably how that works. I mean, really, like, don't be not afraid, people. You've been watched for years. It's just, it wasn't for any notorious reason. It was to sell to you. Like, that's the flip of it. It wasn't trying to undermine
if
you.
The
or
the app or the website is free,
they're selling
for you to use. That means you're the product.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I love that you're like you say, Voss doesn't know how to do this. And I love that the supervisor's like, you're moving at a snail's pace today. Can you pick it up a little bit? And he just, you know, and then starts having those kind of, I call them like psychoactive episodes, like where I think Colin's mind is fighting back against her, which is weird because again, he's supposed to be brain dead. Right. You know, during this, like the procedure is supposed to kind of numb him. And then when she shoots him or shoots herself at the end of it, that ultimately kills him, but he's not supposed to be able to move during this. And I equated this to like the fear that I've always had, having had several of these, in my life, is waking up during surgery. My dad had that happen to him once. He talks vividly about what that was like. He couldn't feel anything, but he knew what was happening. And I thought, that would be horror and hell beyond all known. If you wake up in the middle of something like that, I was like, that's what this has got to feel like.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, and this is a cool thing. So one of those visual distortions that happens a couple of times. It looks like a white, like a piece of like, you know, like when those, a little chip of styrofoam.
Yeah. I was going to ask you what was with the particle. Yeah.
And it's vibrating. Mm-hmm. And then he goes to pick it up and there's nothing there. And it happens again later. There's like this little like white glob or like piece of like artificial snow or something. And it's vibrating. And I was like, is this supposed to be a hallucination or is it just some kind of a visual distortion? And then later when Gerder is kind of reinforcing the rules of what needs to happen, one of the things that Gerder says to Flag, if Voss experiences this when she's under, is something artifacting. Well, I looked up artifacting and the definition that dictionary.com came up with for me was, in digital technology, the introduction of a visible or audible anomaly during the processing or transmission of digital data. And I think that's really cool. This way of visually showing something like that we would talk about in digital technology, like in a computer, but it's something that her mind is doing in his body.
It's only her too. It's kind of like the totems in Inception, you know, that everybody had to have. It had to be real personal to you. But in this case, it's more of a, something in the code is breaking, and this is how it physically manifests for the person. Even though it's not real, it feels real to them. Yeah. That's a cool way of thinking. I hadn't thought about that. It was such a neat little thing. And at first I thought, this is a kind of a throwaway, but they kept going back to it. I was like, no, that's gotta be a thing. So I'm glad you looked that up. I did not know what that was. I love that though. That's great.
And that this was something that Voss should have flagged. The first time that Voss inhabiting Colin sees this little anomaly should have been on the horn to Gerder to say, hey, I'm seeing these visual distortions. Something's not right. But Voss doesn't do that.
No. And, you know, he freaks out or she freaks out at the table and goes to the bathroom. And then that's when they have that first break where Colin becomes aware, at least temporarily, that something's wrong. And the way they do that is it's just, again, Andrew Riseborough just sort of appears over his left shoulder and then she's gone. It's like a ghost. And I mean, it reminded me so much of like a lot of Japanese horror, you know, and just the way the ghosts will appear in and out of the shadows and all that Dean Cundey shit and all that. I was like, I ate that up. I was like, oh, that is just too, I rewound it watching it because I'm just geeking out going, I mean, this is just so cool. Because the other thing is this movie has this really stark soundtrack going too. It's just these drone notes, but then it just stings right at that moment. It's to jar you the way that the character's being jarred at the moment.
Score is amazing.
Oh, it's really, really cool. But I love that we get that moment and we realize that like, maybe it was all the coke this guy did, or maybe he's just that mentally strong, but he is fighting against this. And maybe it's because she's not focused. And so when, you know, she reconnects or whatever, Gerder gets back in there, she's trying to focus her. It's almost like, you know, somebody talking you through like a meditation, you know, and giving her all these countdowns and here's what you can do and all this stuff to try to get her through. And I'm like, man, the effort it takes to just not only just do this, but to maintain in that moment, it's like being in character all the time. And it reminded me very much of like, this is what directors do with actors, good directors do with actors. And the ones that don't spend time, they hire acting coaches that come in, and this is what they do with the actors to get them in the mode for it. And it was just a cool conversation.
This is what I used to do training people in customer service work, training new customer service agents on how to take difficult calls, on how to communicate to people, how to like get them. Yeah. It's
wild. So I watched this movie that I go to work the next day and both of my teammates come in and they both have like a problem with something and it's got them upset. And so I'm like, okay, so we just got to sit down and sort of unpack it piece by piece. And I realized I was girdering them. I was like trying to get them to unpack it piece by piece, sort of let's compartmentalize that. Okay. Say that. Okay. Got that out. Okay. Now you felt that. That's fair, but we can't say that. We know that. So here's how we move forward. And sitting there trying to get them back. And I was like, I just sent these two people back to be hit people, you know, because I told them write the scathing email and say, look, you moron, and then delete it. And then write the one you're actually going to say to somebody. So just make sure there's nobody in the two when you're writing that first one. That's just a little test, but I like that. I like that. And then we jumped to that dinner party too. And I can tell I'm like, man, this is like it's supposed to be 2008. 2008 or something like that. I'm like, this is like 1987 yuppie party here. Like, we're all doing coke. We're all drinking wine.
That house, it's like Tony Montana could come out at any moment.
Yes, there's so many drugs in that house. It is nuts. But I'm like, this
and everything is gilded and Baroque looking. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like what you say, it's like what you think of, like, in Charlie Sheen's apartment with Daryl Hannah in Wall Street, just the den of evil that was. And these people, and I love that, you know, she's got these friends or whatever, and then Colin goes to the bathroom, and one of them just comes in to casually just use the bathroom. I'm talking, it's okay, your girlfriend doesn't care. And I'm like, immediately, I'm like, oh yeah, these two are fucking. Like, you know, like, these two are having an affair, and that will be revealed later that they are. And it's like, yeah, you knew it. Like, it was obvious.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that the conversation is very simple and very natural.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a bunch of exposition to get us on the same page. They don't have to spell it out. It's the way that they're talking, and just mm-hmm. the little, very natural dialogue lets you know everything you need to know.
What also lets you know is that Voss has done a good job of imitating Colin, because even though something's up, Rita has no idea. Like, she is completely thinks that's the same dude. And that's a good, like, you tell Voss feels a little confident about that, because it's going to lead to what happens next. And I guess if your job was to inhabit other people's bodies, you want to take the body out for a spin. And sure. I'm just going to ask, because I'll never get to do this. If you're a woman and you inherited a man and you became a man all of a sudden, you'd be like, you know what? I think I want to try to have sex like a man.
Because I've been saying this for most of my life. I would love one day just to have the equipment and just to see what it's like, all the various things that you can do with that body part that I do not possess.
It's what you see here is a very intimate scene with two people who clearly are in a relationship. They're making love, but there's something in it before he flips her over. Ava puts her hand around his throat and over his mouth. It starts to choke him, like, oh, they're into some kinky shit. But Voss is not here for that. She's like, nope, we ain't doing that tonight. And I thought, and I looked at little, just that, it's just some subtle detail that could just be lost. But you're like, in this relationship, Ava clearly is in charge. Like, she is, you can tell. But Voss is not Colin, not in that way. And she's not going to go for that. So that's when she flips her over, and it is an incredible scene. I read the behind the scene on it that Cronenberg wrote it in the script, and then he thought nobody will want to do this. And Reisner read it and said, we have to do this. There's a point when he flips her over, he's on top of her, and he pulls back up, and the top half is Andrea Reisner, is Voss. The bottom half is Colin, and it's all there. Yes. And it's like,
now this is the uncut version.
Yes.
If you watch the theatrical, that one shot is missing.
Can I just say this real quick? I'm just going to say this. We have got to get over male nudity in movies. If we're going to have nudity in movies, it's all fair. Either it's all fair or none of it's fair. Like, just either way, I am not offended by it. I know what that looks like. I possess one. It's fine. Look, let's all move on. Like, but
thank you.
What that is, though, what that scene represents is the mind twist of this movie. It's holy shit, because part of him is aware, I'm not really here right now, but I am. And part of her is acutely aware that this is very different than what I expected. And it is, again, there's no words. There's all that blue light, and it's just this stark banging noises in the background. And it is a real twist. And
it's a very striking visual.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is so important to this story of telling us about how Voss experiences
mm-hmm.
all of the sensations of being in another person's body.
And what it does to her mind, too.
Yes.
You
know, this is so vital to the story. So,
yeah,
I would say everyone should go out and see the uncut version if you haven't already.
Yeah. I mean, I
see that shot.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's not, again, you watch, there's some movies where the sex scene is definitely there for titillation, All right. And the sex scenes in this movie are not built that way. There's intimacy happening, but you're supposed to be paying attention, and you will pay attention to that. And that striking shot is what will bring you back out of it if you get lost in it for a second.
Tells you something about the character, about their mindset, about where they're at.
Well, you're two people at the same time. Which is no one can experience like what that's like, but this is what that would be like. And it is an incredible scene. It should be in the cut. Again, I've been on my soapbox. Get over male nudity, y'all. It's okay. I mean, it happens.
Please. Get over it.
Yes. We meet Sean Bean, and I wrote in my notes when you finally see him, I'm like, well, yet another Sean Bean death scene coming right up, y'all. Because when they told me what his name was, I was like, of course it's him.
And he is, this John Parse character is a real asshole.
Well, I know. And you know he had to eat this up. Like, just playing such a jackass.
This is a fun role for him. He did an excellent job. There is nothing Ned Stark lovable about John Parse.
He is as every other asshole character he's ever played is here again. This is like, this had to be fun to do because he gets to be a total jerk. And to no doubt, Christopher Rabbit has to like make a scene in this too and like get himself thrown out of the park. And he goes off too. And I'm like, that had to be fun. Like, wouldn't you always like to tell your asshole future father-in-law, as soon as your daughter's done blowing me, I'll leave the party, man, you know, or whatever. I'm like, man, these people are going for it. But it's great though, because you can tell where Ava has the power in the relationship with Colin, Dad definitely has the power in all the relationships. And I mean, he's so horrible to her. He'll go off to run off to Borneo with your mother or whatever, you know. And he just doesn't care about people at all, because he represents the rich and powerful asshole that we all want to just see get it. And so we're there for it when Colin decides to go for it. He sets it all up.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, we got to talk about this killing, because this is a lot. Like, this gets rough.
So if there is anyone who's still listening to this that has not seen the movie, I'm going to say, you only think you've seen all the different ways that Sean Bean can be killed on screen.
Oh, no.
You ain't seen nothing yet. And so you've seen Possessor.
I believe the phrase I wrote down was toe up from the flow up.
It, again, Voss doesn't use the handgun provided.
Mm-hmm.
Voss doesn't want it to be impersonal. Voss gets the fire poker.
Yeah.
Which is like a multi-use kind of weapon, because you can use it for blunt trauma. You can use it for stabbing, puncture trauma. You can use it for all sorts of things. And all of those things happen to Sean Bean's head.
Yeah. Sean Bean, the fact that his character somewhat survives this, and we'll find out later, only to die in the hospital later, is you can tell why. The amount of damage that got done to the prosthetic they built is, I mean, it's like Gallagher going after a watermelon. If anybody knows what I'm talking about,
that's the best analogy for what happens.
It is brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And I've seen a lot of brutal kills, watching a lot of horror movies through the years and stuff. And this was not only a brutal kill, but like you said, Voss is taking out a lot of frustration do these hits, which is the thing you cannot do if you do this kind of that kind of a job. You have to be so impersonal about it, that because if you don't, this is where you trip yourself up, right? And just all the coldness is gone, and all of a sudden it's all that rage just coming out. And again, Christopher Abbott is just acting his ass off, you know, beating the shit out of Sean Dean. And what's wild is Ava comes in and, of course, sees all of this, and he knows he's got to kill her too. And Voss hesitates not one second and just guns her down. And what I liked about that was, when you get shot in a movie, people just fall over and they're gone. You get shot, it takes, you don't die immediately like that. And what I liked is that he shot her in the back and she fell on the ground, and he had to stand there and watch her die before he shot her in the head again. And it was just I was just, there was something so personal about it for Voss. And I don't know what it, it's not them specifically. It's definitely her stuff going on, but watching that person, it's like watching a hitman work out their personal problems in somebody. It's very, very dark.
It's intense.
Yeah.
It's intense. But then at this point we have another glitch where Colin is coming through and becoming aware.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool from here on out. We have that struggle between the two where Colin's in charge and Voss has receded, and then he's accessing Voss's consciousness, and then Voss comes back in and they're doing that dance. But one of the really cool things I noticed, especially this last go around, was when Colin's in charge and he gets flashes of the murders he just committed physically, even though he was not in control, and he's kind of starts to get nauseous and sick and he's kind of gagging, and you can really see the horror on his face that murder is abhorrent to him.
Yeah.
It's frightening to him. He's disgusted and sickened by these things that Voss does every day for work.
Right. It's just, and that's just to show you just the difference in the two people, that there is, you know, he may be what he is in his personal life or whatever, but he was not a killer and she is. And it, he can't see it. He can't look at it, can't deal with it. And
he's, it's been forced on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Images and just the physical reality that his body committed these acts.
Yeah. And so that's what he takes off, you know, because of course can't pull the trigger still. And we don't know what's going to happen now. Cause that's, I mean, you think like this would be the third act of every movie, right? But this is the end of the second act. We're about to get into the real roller coaster. And this whole split is about to get real messed up. So he goes over, of course, to Rita's place, because where else is he going to go? Cause I think at this moment, Colin is in control again for a little bit here.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out what to do, doesn't know where to go, you know. And I thought I saw, and it may have just been a camera trick or something, but they do something, they push a light in his face just in a certain way where you see this little flicker go off in Christopher Abbott's eyes, and it's almost like that's when Voss takes back over. Because he changes his whole demeanor, it gets real cold all of a sudden, Rita goes to take the shower, and then he goes and shoots her. I'm like, that's Voss. I was like, but the way they revealed that, because again, I didn't catch it the first time. It was just on all the rewatches. I saw that and I thought, what a neat little thing. Cause there's this whole thing and people, and I'm seeing this myself. Like when people are alive, their eyes have a different light to them. And when they're gone, it's just this dark blankness to it. It's hard to explain if you haven't seen it, but if you have, you know what I mean? And I feel like Brandon Cronenberg is kind of playing on that. It's like, He's able to talk still because he's barely in control. But when Voss takes back over, he's dead. He's gone. It's like the light goes off. And it's like, it's so dark. And again, the music just pulses right through all that. And and of course, Tosi wasted no time blowing that chick away, you know, but we don't even see it. That's the thing, is they don't need to show us, because they've shown us all the ultraviolence now. We don't have to do that anymore. And you know, there's some directors that can pull that off, like Stanley Kubrick skirted a lot of lines with A Clockwork Orange, and ultimately too much for my taste, but he knew at one point in the movie when to stop, when to pull it back. We don't need to see it anymore, because we've seen everything we could possibly see at that point, you know, right? And I appreciate that about this, because again, I'll throw him under the bus, because why not? Rob Zombie never knows when to stop, like ever. I'm surprised Eddie Munster didn't like eat a hamster in front of people at that movie. You know, I'm glad he kind of kept that one tame, but that's the only thing he's ever done like that. So and next he's going to come up with like an acoustic album, and my mind will be completely severed like this one. But the fact that you see that changeover happens, and then the company sends in his coworker, and this is what I love. I'm like, this is when you know the seeds of this shit are deep. Poor Eddie. Eddie's been talking with him, and he was like, man, I heard like you were, you know, cheating on her while you're on the vacation or whatever. And so we think Eddie's just, you know, just some dick at work, right? But nope, he's actually there to watch in case all hell breaks loose. And he's there to come in and calm things down. I'm going to recalibrate you. And I love that whole scene because he's like, look, I just need you to shoot me and get over with. And I love his response. Like, I'm a Christian. I can't do that. I'm like, yes. Bro, you're a hitman.
Well, and Eddie has this like hero worship of Voss.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, the great Tanya Voss. I love your work, you know? And then, yeah. But he will not shoot the Colin host.
No, it's like, nope, gonna do it. Right. She's trying to recalibrate the implant and split them, but it doesn't work. Cause obviously we see the results of it is, and that was my thing. I was like, why did Voss kill him? You know, like, or did Colin kill him? I couldn't decide. I think Voss killed him, but
I think it was Voss because it's Colin that comes too. And it's that reaction of the horror. He's so horrified. He goes, oh, Eddie, like,
it's like blood.
He's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clearly not alive.
Well, they have that great scene too. It's again, the visual representation of the severing of the mind when he picks up that mask. That's the facial mask of Andrew Reisiger, and he puts it on. And it's really if you can see the cover of the, you know, the movie art for this thing, it's what's there. And it's just this askew kind of Pink Floyd, the Wall mask or something going on.
All of the features are distorted. Well, and when he goes to take the skin, it's Colin crushes the skull of this Voss consciousness and then pulls the skin off and turns it into a mask. And it's
very funky. Like, it's, I'm going to say this. It's everything that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie has tried to do for 10 movies and has never pulled off as well. Maybe once that remake they did when Eric Balfour's face gets cut off and the big football player puts it on his face, his leather face. That's actually pretty good. That's actually a good scene. The rest of that movie's garbage, but that was a good scene. But this is so, again, it's all these flashes of things, and you see her street and her son and her house, and you see that he is now able to actively probe her mind, which is the first time he's been able to do it. And
this is a problem.
This is a real problem, because I think you made a great comparison. He crushes her skull, the psyche of her skull, so it puts her back in the back room for a little bit where she can't jump out just yet. He's got to go, and he's going for revenge. And I love how just that little bit of information is all he needs. And he goes to that house and he goes to get her. And I mean, it's what goes down with her family and him is pretty amazing, because all the times we've seen Voss go after somebody with a knife, you know, he goes in there with the gun. He's holding the guy with the gun. The husband picks up, you know, the knife and tries to cut him, and it's when he grabs him and starts stabbing him. It's like Colin loses himself in that.
Yeah.
And it is as violent a stabbing as Sean Bean got.
Well, Colin, bless him, he doesn't know that Voss's family doesn't know what she does for a living. Michael could not have given you an answer because Michael has no clue.
Mm-mm. But this is everything Gerder talked about too. It's like, the closer you keep them, the more in danger they'll be. She's not wrong.
Yes. We're in grave danger.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Is there any other? But I love, in the middle of all of that, the little boy walks up and just that it's a flashback too, which is so good. When the scene that got her going with her husband when they were having sex early on, it's the same throat cut, you know? And you see that little boy just step back.
But before we jump into that, there's a really cool thing. I love this dialogue that Colin has when he's still has Michael pinned and he's trying to get information out of him. And Michael keeps saying, I don't know. And then Colin starts, cause you can tell Colin's unraveling. He's freaked out. He has way too many memories of being murdered by his hand that he didn't do. And there's someone in his head and he's freaked. And he says, do you ever think of your wife as a predator?
Yeah. It's a great line.
And then he goes into this thing about parasites in your brain. And if the worm is in your brain and you get an idea, how do you know that the idea is yours? What if it's the worms? Like, it sounds crazy, but when you really think about it, it's all about this, the identity and who are you? And
well, it's the dark side of Inception, right?
Yes.
Did I really get that idea, or did somebody give it to me? and it's
there. Did you plant it in me?
Right. And as you're in relationships with people, you do plant things in each other's heads, not necessarily to gaslight each other, but
no,
it's just you, it's what you do. You plant thoughts about each other and memories and all kinds of things. And then it may supplant reality in some ways, not necessarily in a distortedly bad way, but in a way that you, the person, if they really started to unravel it, would go like, but I didn't really like the blue one. I liked the green one. You just told me I liked the blue one. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't like that movie.
Yeah.
I rented that because you wanted to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well,
at one point, you know, he calls Voss out. Mm-hmm. Come out. I'll kill him.
Yeah. It's like a possession and we movie. See
this, yes. And we mm-hmm. see this kind of ghost-like visual of Voss, and he's talking to Voss in his head, but they're talking out loud.
It's
and,
awesome.
And then, yeah. Oh, it's so cool. And then Voss, talking about Michael, says, I loved him too, but I'm not sure it was me. Ooh. And again, it's this identity stuff.
She's been playing a role at home, but the real her. And this is what Gerder has said all along, is the real you is this super assassin killer. And you go fake it when you leave here.
At home.
Yeah. But it's like that whole thing about Bruce Wayne and Batman. There's really no Bruce Wayne. There's just Batman playing Bruce Wayne after a certain point, right? Like that's the whole part of Batman's psyche. It's what makes him an interesting comic book character, because he's never not the superhero. Well, the same way Superman is just playing Clark Kent. Like he's not, you know, this, all of them do this in some way, but Batman's the one with the darker edge, so it fits better. But it's the same idea. It's like you are these things. You can't deny what you really are. And the more you fight it, look at the damage it does.
Yes. Yeah. The more twisted and distorted and complicated things get.
Mm-hmm. I did not see the sun coming in for the kill, though. That happened, I was like,
the first time.
Yeah.
It was like my heart stopped for a second.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's a straight to the jugular. It's over, you know. And the fact that he wheels around with that gun and it's boom, boom into the kid and the kid barely reacts. You have just enough time in your brain to go, oh, shit, they're taking over the kid, too.
Yes.
And for it to flash back and be Voss that shoots her own kid in the head before saying, pull me out, is like, wow, that this movie just went down the darkest hole it could go down.
And it wasn't just like one shot to the head. Like Voss unloads like 3 or 4 rounds.
Yeah.
And screams. There's like, again, that rage.
Just getting it all out.
She's trying to work through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then they pull them both out, you know, and that's when they do that reveal and it's Jennifer Jason Leigh and you realize like, well, the boss had to come in and save you. You know, there's something cool about it though, too. There's like, she's so badass. She can wait till the last 2 minutes to come in and finish this. You know, it's like, that's cool. I want her story next. But he says he's got stuff for a sequel. We'll see. But I was just blown away at this. And then we go through the whole, you know, test again. And, you know, she's got that butterfly that she talked about earlier, how she killed it to pin it and put it in the glass thing. And she felt a lot of remorse over it, whatever. And they do that whole, like the blood sort of turns into the butterfly. It's very Silence of the Lambs at the end of this. And the second time when she does it, it's just as cold an affect as you can have. You can tell like, there's nothing, but it's not like mean. It's more of like relieved. Like, yes, I no longer,
the
it's
guilt
like,
is gone.
Yeah. Right. Like I finally turned in that assignment. I'm finally done with that thing. I'm finally done with that relationship, whatever it is. I'm done with it. And you move on and you're just sort of, okay, you know, and it's, there's just,
it's very eerie.
Yeah. It's kind of scary. Cause you're like, if you've been this good and this effective and this destructive halfway into it, I can't imagine what Untamed Voss is. Like,
and that's got to be part of the reason why they would still want you for this job, even after you kind of mangled the last two assignments.
It's messy. Yeah. Like these two are kind of messy. And we hear like we hear on the radio, like he wasn't dead. His daughter's dead. But apparently he does die, you know, because they're able to take over the company, do whatever they want. And that but it's such a it's so neat to have a movie that's got infinite places to go, but also have like a very good close. Like if they never do anything else with this, and I, again, I hope they do. If they don't, then it is a self-contained story. And maybe that's, I really gravitated to that more because it feels like anything you watch these days is being set up for something else, whether it ever happens or not. And I like that, that it, there's a finality to it, but there's also in your own mind, the stories you create are so much, you know, more interesting than maybe what they have in the hopper.
Agreed.
Yeah. This is a, it is definitely a twisty one, but I don't think it'll be a huge surprise, but let's do it for all time's sake. Final thoughts, recommendations, popcorn ratings for Possessor. What are yours, Carmelita?
So, I mean, this is the jumbo popcorn. And mm-hmm. they like put like extra butter and it's like the good butter, like the real fresh tasting. And it's like the popcorn is really warm and it's not chewy. Like it's, it actually tastes like real popcorn. It's mm-hmm. jumbo. I just love this movie so much. I think it's, it is all the things I love about science fiction. But they don't have to take us to space in this one. Mm-mm. This is a very like centered, grounded on Earth story. And the technology is really fascinating. And it's also ultimately a story about people, about identity, about coming to grips with who you are in your own life and where do you fit and are you being true to yourself? Who are you really? All of those things that are very, the questions that everybody asks themselves at some point in their life. And it's told through this really intense, really dark story. It's just, I think it's amazing. It still blows me away every time I watch it.
I got to join you in the extra large popcorn because this movie is brilliant. It really is in every way. The performances are amazing, even just little things. And we didn't talk much about her. Thomas Middleton is really good in this as Ava, as the rich girl, but also has her own identity and has things she wants. And when she dies, it's sad. Like you're like, she didn't deserve that. And that's what we never know.
She did not deserve this.
We know what he deserved to get it because like Sean Bean's character is an asshole. Like, okay, yeah, we know why he's dying. Why did Ava have to die? And it dawned on me the last time watching, like, oh, you can't leave behind any heirs. It's Game of Thrones taught me this. It's like, nope, you kill them all. Because if you don't, it'll grow up and it'll come back and get you. And she, that sex scene where she starts to do that strangle play with him or whatever, lets you know she's as ruthless as the old man. She can be. She's got that streak in her. And we can't leave that loose end. Also makes the story better if he just goes crazy and kills everybody. Because why would he not kill her too, right? That's the whole idea. But she didn't deserve what she got, and it hurts. But again, Christopher Abbott gives such a performance. You're having to play three different people, and really the broken part of him is what's so cool to watch. And the visuals of this are just amazing and striking, and so many things that I'll never get out of my head again. You know, and not even just the double body scene, but like the face scene, and then the ultra violence. But again, where it's not played for the kind of gore that you would expect in like an ultra horror movie, like a Hostel movie or something like that. It's more of like, if you cut somebody's head off, this is what it looks like. You know, this is what it's going to be. It's very real.
This is a messy business.
It is. Yeah. It's a messy word. And it goes to show that like, just shoot. If you shoot people, it's impersonal. You stab them, it's very personal. And this is, it's all about the personal things. I go back to like Godfather, you know, where they're talking about that. Like, you don't make it personal, you know? And this movie just draws upon so many things that I like and that are so like fundamental for me for sci-fi. Like I said, like Philip K. Dick, stuff like that. And even Ridley's
Neuromancer God. Is another one that came to mind.
Yes. Yes. Very much. And even a little bit of Terry Gilliam, but there's not a lot of humor to this, but there's a little bit of that in there. I'm not a huge fan of his, but he's definitely got a style. But really, when you think, I mean, I think about like Ridley again and even Tony to some extent. I did a Deja Vu recently and talked about that movie and on Schlock and Awe, and the movie's got like there's a lot of sci-fi to that. That's sort of fun, you know, and that's what I like about this. And even Jennifer Jason Leigh, who's this little nothing part. I mean, really is. She's in like three scenes, but she's amazing in all of it. And having watched her again since she was a teenager, you know, and see her now. And I'm like, well, first, I'm really old, but second, holy smokes, like you've been doing this a long time and you're still good. You know, it's just, there's just something about this is so good. And again, it's one of those movies that you miss it in theaters, no doubt. But if it's sitting in your Hulu queue or somebody's recommended it, one of us has probably texted you about it. If you're in our Twitter circles or whatever, go and watch it. Have other people watch it. It's the kind of movie you can watch by yourself and just sort of absorb on, but it's also really fun to watch and then talk about with the other people too. I think that's a testament to a movie that you get things every time you watch it and you want to have a conversation about it every time you watch it. So Extra Large Popcorn for me as well.
I am so grateful to you for giving me this opportunity to talk about it with somebody.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you again for coming to be a part of the show. Tell folks how they can follow you and all the cool things that you're doing.
Sure. So folks can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd. Same handle for both, at Carmelita Says.
And I guarantee you, if you're following Filmstrip or me on Twitter and stuff, you see me retweet shows that Carmelita's been a part of, friends of this podcast and other things that she's on. Carmelita's like the all-star podcast guest. Which is the way to have. So I appreciate you coming and being a part of the show. Always fun to talk movies with you and can't wait to circle back around sometime. We'll have to hit up Infinity Pool sometime and talk about that.
Yes, because there's
definitely thoughts on that. Folks, you can follow the show social media at Filmstrip Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all the other social media. You'll find announcements about upcoming shows. You can find a link to our Letterboxd page where it has our entire list of reviews. If you go to filmstrippodcast.com, that's going to take you to our Spotify podcast page. That's the old Anchor page is now just turned to Spotify podcasting. And you'll find all of our shows there, all 300 and something episodes. We're on every platform, Apple, Spotify, Google. Please share the show on your socials. And if you can, leave us a positive review. It helps other people find the podcast. We've been doing this thing for 13 years. I can't believe it. And we'll never run out of movies. So always fun to be a part of it. So again, thanks for being on the show. For Carmelita, I'm Jay. Thank you for listening to Filmstrip.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504(c)(2), Title 17.